जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंदन यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंदन यमुन तीर वन चारी यमुन तीर वन चारी राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंदन यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंदन यमुन तीर वन चारी यमुन तीर वन चारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सुत श्री श्रीमद हिस्तवांगे शिले श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय श्री श्री राधा दामोदर की जय नो प्रेमानंदे हरि गो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आदरेशिय समग्र की आदरेशिय समग्र की आदरेशिय समग्र की आदरेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ namo bhagavate vasudevaya. I'm going to begin tonight by reading a little something. This is from the Gopalachampu. Gopalachampu is written by Srila Jiva Goswami. It's essentially a retelling of the pastimes of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's written in a special literary form, champu, which is a mixture of narrative and poetry. And Jiva Goswami himself, he says that it is a presentation of the Siddhanta, or the philosophical conclusions that are contained in the Krishna Sundarbha, which is the philosophical work that he wrote about Krishna. He wrote 6 philosophical treatises. One of those is called Krishna Sundarbha, which is specifically about Krishna. So he says he's presenting the same ideas of the same philosophy that he wrote about in a very deep philosophical way in Krishna Sundarbha, in this Gopalachampu. So I'm going to read, this is the end of the chapter called Binding Krishna. This song we sing, Damodarashtakam, because I think pretty much everybody here knows the pastime, the Damodar Leela. So when you hear the song, then you understand what's being referred to. It's not exactly a narrative, it doesn't tell a story, it's not a ballad, but it mentions things that we're familiar with. What Krishna looked like, and Krishna shaking, and Mother Yashoda ultimately binding him. And then it also mentions Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. So they were the sons of Kuvera, and they had been cursed to become trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father. And when Krishna was tied to the mortar by his mother, he pulled it between these two trees and pulled it down, knocked down the trees. Huge trees had been there for hundreds of years. And these two effulgent personalities came out, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. And they had been cursed/blessed by Narada Muni because of their misbehavior in the heavenly planets. Now the blessing was they had been cursed to become trees, but in the courtyard where Krishna would appear. And the blessing was that Krishna would liberate them from those tree bodies and of course also give them pure devotional service. So when this is mentioned in this chapter, Binding Krishna and Gopalachampu, after it's... The chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam is quite short, it's less than 30 verses, where it ends with the... We hear the background story in the next chapter about Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, but we hear, you know, Krishna being bound up by Mother Yashoda and then that whole chasing him around and all of that. In that chapter, and then it ends with the liberation of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. So then in the Gopalachampu we have this sort of an epilogue that Jiva Goswami has written, which I think is quite sweet. So I'm going to read this, a couple of pages here from this book, Gopalachampu. By the way, I don't know if you know, but this pastime took place on Diwali. That was one reason why Deepavali. That was one reason why Yashoda was churning milk herself. There are different reasons, but that was one of the reasons. Because all her servants were out doing things for the festival. So she was home alone and churning the yogurt to produce butter for Krishna. There's another explanation too, that she said, my servants don't know how to pick the best milk. So she wanted to make sure she got the best milk. So she had chosen the best cows out of Nanda Maharaj's. Sometimes it said 900,000 cows. Although I was just reading, actually in Gopalachampu earlier when Krishna was born, it says that Nanda Maharaj gave away 2 million cows in charity. So I guess he had more than 900,000. So among those, she picked the best ones that would give the best milk, and she was churning those herself. So it was Diwali. In any case, it was Deepavali. So here, after the... When the people, when the two trees came crashing down, then the adults came running there to find out what had happened, and the boys told them what happened. Krishna dragged this mortar between the two trees and knocked it down, and They just said, oh, these kids there, they don't know what they're talking about. How could the little baby Krishna knock down these two gigantic trees? So anyway, so it says, let's see. Gradually, one by one, others came and joined Nanda. So Nanda Maharaj wasn't around during the whole interaction between Krishna and his mother. He was at work, tending the cows. Gradually, one by one, others came and joined Nanda. Holding Krishna on his chest, he went to the Yamuna River to perform his daily rites. Taking a bath, now it's early, it's morning now, it's still morning. This pastime took place early in the morning. Taking a bath with his son, he had brahmanas chant auspicious prayers, and after dismissing them with great gifts, returned to his house to take his morning meal. Being unhappy because of separation from Krishna and ashamed of having tied him up, Yashoda did not come out of the house and did not talk to other women in the house. When the other women left, Rohini, who solves all problems, surrounded her along with the respectable kitchen assistants. So Mother Yashoda is feeling remorseful. Maybe I shouldn't have tied Krishna up like that. Nanda brought Krishna and Balaram and ate his meal with them while engaging in affectionate, soft talk. He relaxed with the two, who were supreme and bliss incarnate, for two muhurtas. That's two. A muhurta is 48 minutes, so about an hour and a half. They had breakfast together and they sat together. His heart was satisfied as if lying on a soft bed. In other words, he's satisfied, but he's with them, with Krishna and Balaram, and his heart is feeling very satisfied. He went to the cowshed at that time. At the time, the cows came and supervised their milking. Bringing white sugar from the house, he had the two boys, along with his friends, drink most beneficial milk fresh from the cow as a substitute for breast milk. He taught them how to write some letters. So this apparently is a substitute for breast milk, at least in this culture. Now they say white sugar, I'm sure it's not the kind of white sugar that we get refined and who knows what it is. But pure white sugar apparently with cow's milk is a substitute for breast milk. Because Mother Yashoda, she's kind of in hiding right now. Entering the house, he met with others, Nanda met with others, to have his evening meal. So now it's the end of the day. Desiring unbroken happiness for his son, the head women, including Rohini, that Balaram's mother, the jewels of their families, came and made a request. O King, Yashoda has not eaten all day, and she does not speak to anyone. Seeing that, all have also followed her example. Nanda spoke with sadness and a smile. What can we do? After showing anger, one should regret one's fault. So he's not siding with Yashoda at this point. They said with tears in their eyes, Ah, she is very soft internally and externally. She will be devastated by your words. Slightly smiling, Nanda asked his son, Will you go to your mother? Krishna said, No, no. I will spend my time with you. Then the wives of Nanda's elder brother said, Whose milk will you drink? Krishna said, I will drink fresh milk from the cows mixed with sugar. They all said, Who will you play with? Krishna said, I will play with my father. I will bring my brother too. Nanda said, Will you not go to your brother's mother, Rohini? Angrily, Krishna said with tears in his eyes, She left me and went away. Hearing this, Rohini, with tears in her eyes, said softly, O son, why are you so harsh? Your mother is suffering. Not listening to her words, Krishna, with tearful eyes, glanced at his mother's face. Glanced at his father's face. To attract Krishna, Rohini gave a signal to Balaram. Balaram went to Krishna and held his hand. Krishna rejected his hand and went to the lap of his father and held his arms around his neck, looking at Nanda's tear-filled eyes and bringing Nanda under his control. Seeing Krishna's internal affection for his mother, Nanda raised his hand as if to beat Yashoda in order to reveal Krishna's affection for her. Oh son, if you agree, I will beat her. Krishna could not tolerate this and blocked Nanda's hand. Smiling again, Nanda, showing great compassion because of his parental affection and understanding the heart of Krishna's mother, said, Oh son, if your mother is in this condition, what will you do? He spoke while smiling, indicating that she would die. Because of his childish nature, Krishna immediately became anxious for his mother. With tears in his eyes, he said, Where is mother? I must go there. In anxiety, he went to Rohini's lap. While all were noisily laughing, Rohini, who bestows the greatest happiness, took him and entered the house. He hugged his mother's neck while crying in joy. She kissed the child's head and made sounds like a cow. With melted heart, she sobbed, making all others there sob. Yashoda pacified the women with comforting words, and a slight glow appeared on her face. She appeared healthy with a beautiful face and satisfied her child with breast milk. With the other helpful women, she fed him and Balaram. For 3 days after the incident, being reserved, Yashoda did not show herself to Nanda. But on another day, Krishna, on the order of his father, brought her to him, holding the edge of her cloth. From the day that he was bound, the women of Vraja called the beautiful dark child Damodar in a joking way. So here, this is how Jiva Goswami ends this chapter. What poet amongst all the people in this world can describe Yashoda, whom Shukadev has said is much superior to Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi? The drum roll of her fame, announced by Shukadev, wanders throughout the three worlds with great renown. Quote from the Bhagavatam, Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. Balaram said to Krishna with anticipation, O brother, do you remember that you said we would live in a big forest? Krishna said with a smile, Oh yes, we will go and play there. That's basically the end of the way it ends. So this pastime, I'd say all of Krishna's pastime, at the end of this song, Damodar Leela, we offer obeisances to Krishna and to his unlimited pastimes. Well, Krishna comes to this world to perform pastimes to show us what the spiritual world is like. Actually, this song by Satyavrata Muni, he's the one who wrote this Damodar Ashrikam, or spoke it, he spoke it in one shastra. He spoke to Shonaka Rishi and Narada Muni. So he begins, actually it's interesting because the song is so much about maternal affection, really what it's about, you know, parental affection, Vatsalya Bhava, a technical term. And because Krishna's a child, Krishna exhibits different ages. He can do anything he wants. Actually, it's said in the Shastra that Krishna's eternal age is Kaishur, which means basically 15, like the end of his, each of the periods of Krishna's life has three parts. So the last part of his Kaishur age, which is youth, and that's called his eternal age. And then from that age, he takes different forms to interact with his devotees, to satisfy their desires, to serve him in different ways, to interact with them. In fact, in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, there's a list of things that are excitants to bhava, or feelings of love for Krishna, or prema, feelings of prema for Krishna. So among the list of things that excite or awaken, actually the word is uddipan. Dipa means flame, you know, deep, we're offering deep now, deep is a flame. So uddipa means inflame. So to inflame, to bring, to fire up one's feelings for Krishna, there are certain things that do that. And one of them is Krishna's qualities. And we all know that, those of us who have read The Nectar of Devotion, 64 qualities of Krishna. So the context of that in that book is this idea that the qualities of Krishna, they excite feelings for them. So in this this song, we hear a lot. We hear so many things about Krishna that can help draw out our feeling, our bhava, our own feeling, and especially the, of course, it is the highlight of the feelings of a mother or a superior, you know, seeing Krishna as a child. He's so attractive. He's so beautiful. So it's a lot about rasa, what we say rasa or bhava, or feeling, emotion, which is, of course, we have basically two aspects of our philosophy. We have the very rigid philosophical side, tattva, understanding tattva, what is the truth of existence, what's the truth of reality. And part of that truth, and in one sense, it overrides everything, is emotion. Ultimately, what's important is emotion. This is left out in basically all the, even the philosophies of India, even the Vaishnava philosophies, there's not so much emphasis on this rasa. That's especially a contribution of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, and Rupa Goswami, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of rasa, the ocean of taste. Although it's not a new idea, it's there even in the Upanishads, the early, what are considered to be early Vedic literature. It says, rasa vaisa. The absolute truth is rasa. We also know, of course, he's Satchidananda Rupam. His form is composed of bliss, ecstasy. That's part of what he's made of. So with this song, it actually begins by talking about both Krishna's Ishvaratva, which means his controllership, but also his Satchidananda, his Ananda side. Namam Ishwaram Satchidananda Rupam. So right from the beginning we hear, this is actually a song, Namam Ishwaram. I offer my obeisances to the Ishwara, to God. Actually, the very beginning of the song is offering obeisances to God, the Supreme Controller. That's Krishna, a little baby. Song is about this little boy. We're thinking maybe he's, what, 1 or 2 years old at this time, still, you know, drinking milk from his mother. And I was thinking in this Damodar Lila, we don't, now, Jiva Goswami is having him talk, but in the, we don't usually hear, in the Bhagavatam, I don't think he says anything in that chapter. So he's still a young boy, very, very young. But he's Ishvara. He's actually Ishvara. This person that you're going to hear about and that the poet is glorifying in this song is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. It's from him that all these universes come. Actually, in the Bhagavatam, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam has so many prayers in it. Throughout the Bhagavatam, we have different personalities offering prayers. And pretty much, they're about, you know, they're prayers about Godhood, about Krishna's supreme power. All the universes come from him, and you know, all these kinds of things. You're the time factor. Everyone is under your control. These are the kinds of prayers that we hear pretty much throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because, that, of course, that's important. We have to know that. We have to know about God. But there's also this other side. So when I was mentioning about qualities of Krishna, one of Krishna's qualities is Vashyata. Vashyata means that he's controlled by his devotees' love. And this is considered to be his chief quality, his highest quality, is that he's controlled by his devotees' love, which is an amazing thing when you take these two things together. He's God. Everything is coming from him. We look out at the universe and it's inconceivable how powerful it is. Even one little aspect of this world as we know it, it's like we're hearing a tree fell on a building. So what, you know, what can we do about that? Some tree's going to fall, some huge tree. If you ever hear a tree fall down like that, it's a huge noise and it shakes the earth. I had one fall down behind my house not too long ago. It's amazing, the power of it. So that's just one little speck in my backyard. So the infinite universe, so much power is there. So how much control does God have? But he's controlled by his devotees' love on the other side. This is it's often said that God is, he reconciles all contradictions. So he's the most powerful person, but at the same time, he's the most submissive. he actually in this pastime of Mother Yashoda, one of the points is brought up is that this is about Krishna being controlled. Ultimately, that's what this pastime is about. This vasita, this quality of his of being controlled by his devotee. Even Lord Vishnu has that quality. We hear in the pastime of Durvasa Muni, those of you who know this story of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni was, because he offended Ambarish Maharaj, Lord Vishnu's Sudarshan Chakra was chasing him all over the universe. So ultimately he went to Lord Vishnu and he asked for his protection. And Vishnu said, I can't do anything. I'm under my devotee's control. Whatever they, I have no independence. That's actually what he says. I have no independence. Devotees are my heart and I'm their heart. Basically what they want me to do, that's what I do. So here's Krishna, he can do anything. He can destroy the whole universe with a blink of his eye, but he's controlled by his devotee's love. So bhakti bhavam, that's what it's described here in this song. He's controlled by his devotee's love. So this song, so there's so many beautiful points that are brought out in the song. We hear about Krishna's beauty, his beautiful form, his dark form, and his jewelry. Actually, we hear specifically about his jewelry. Specifically about his earrings. So there's something special about his earrings. And devotees, especially, you might say, are a little jealous of his earrings. Because his earrings get to kiss his cheeks. Even the gopis are envious of the earrings because they're right there kissing Krishna's cheeks. So they're also pointed out in this verse. And there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the second or third canto, second canto, I think, where Krishna is described as Bhushana Bhushanangam, which means that he is the ornament of ornaments. Usually people wear ornaments to make themselves look beautiful, but when Krishna wears ornaments, the ornament, he beautifies the ornaments. Krishna is always more beautiful than any ornaments. It's just out of illusion, you might say, that Mother Yashoda decorates him, or others decorate him. It's a service that they do, but Krishna doesn't need to be decorated. Of course, these things are also part of his essential being, that he has all these jewels that he wears. Now, of course, in part of this pastime, just to mention what went on a little bit, I think, of course, you know that Krishna, he woke up. His mother was churning milk, and he woke up, and he was thirsty, so he went to his mother, and she took him on his... First, he actually grabbed the stick that she was churning with, and she thought, this boy is so intelligent. So then she took him on his lap, and she was breastfeeding him. Then the milk started boiling over in the kitchen, so she put him down briefly to go in to take the milk off the stove. And Krishna got angry because he was in the middle of his meal and his mother took off. You know, he's eating his lunch, his breakfast, and then it's like his breakfast has been taken away from him. So naturally, he's a little upset. So first he breaks the pot, he grabs some stone and he breaks the hole in the pot that Yashoda has been churning the yogurt from, so it leaks out. And then he takes off because he thinks, oh, I'm going to get in trouble here. So he runs into another room, he breaks another pot and starts eating the yogurt. So Mother Yashoda, she comes back and sees what happens, and then she... And there's quite a bit of detail in the story as it's told in different places. But ultimately she sees him and he's scared. He's sitting on top of a grinding mortar, which is, I don't know, a few feet high off the ground. It's upside down. And he's sitting there cross-legged like a yogi. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says he's read about yoga, or he's heard about yogis performing mystic, having mystic cities. So he's thinking, I'm going to make myself invisible. So he tries to meditate, make himself smaller than the smallest so his mother won't catch him. But it's not working. He's saying, why isn't this working? So then he sees over his shoulder, his mother's looking at him. She's looking through a latticed window, and she sees him. And then she starts trying to... She first discovered where he was because his buttermilk footprints were showed where he had gone to another room. So anyway, she starts chasing him. And it's very hard for her to catch him, of course, because he's God. This, of course, is one of the main points of the story. Who can catch God? There's a verse in Brahma Samhita that even if you try to catch God at the speed of the mind, if you're a great philosopher, great jnani, try to capture God for millions and millions of lifetimes at the speed of mind, you can't even get a glimpse of an effulgence of coming from his toenails. So you can't catch him. But so she's trying to catch him. He's God. He looks like a little boy, but he's actually God. So ultimately she catches him because he gets distracted. One reason he gets distracted is because she has a stick in her hand. As she started chasing after him, she saw Nanda Maharaj's walking stick next to the door, so she grabbed it. Jewel-studded walking stick. As he's holding it, as if she's going to beat him. Of course, she wouldn't beat him in a million years, but she wants to scare him a little bit. So this is something that's really amazing, is that he's actually scared. He's not putting on an act. This is a philosophical point that our acharyas discuss. They actually make a point of this. That God, one of the... I just came across this phrase in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada, he quotes this phrase, it's called Gatana Agatana Pratiyasi. It means God's energy, especially Yoga Maya, has the power to make the impossible possible. So God can do what we think is impossible, he can do. His energy does it. His Yoga Maya. So what Krishna does, because again, he's rasa, he wants to enjoy, naturally, we all want to enjoy, so God wants to enjoy more than anybody else. That's essentially what he wants to do. He doesn't want to control, that's no fun. He wants to enjoy. So because he wants to enjoy, then he gives, what do they call that? Power of attorney. He gives power of attorney over to Yoga Maya. He says, I want to enjoy, so I'm just going to, you know, zone out, or whatever you call it, tune out. I'm going to tune out, I'm going to turn off my God side, and I'm just going to have some fun, so I want you to make this happen. That's his will, Ichya Shakti. So Krishna just wills it, Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriyacha, the Upanishad says, whatever he wills, it happens. So this is one of the things, that he's God, and he shouldn't be able to be caught, and he shouldn't be afraid, but he's actually afraid. Navishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, maybe Jiva Goswami too, I think, they both make this point. He said, one reason we can believe this is because of the testimony of Kunti Devi and her prayers offered in the Bhagavatam. Because she said, I'm bewildered. You're, you know, fear personified is afraid of you, but you're afraid of your mother. I can't figure this out. So Vishwanath is saying, well, why would she be bewildered if it wasn't true that Krishna was just faking it? He wasn't faking it. He was actually afraid of his mother. That's why he was running, especially the stick. Because he'd never seen him with a stick before. That was just too much. So anyway, so he keeps looking back, and every time he looks back at the stick, that he kind of loses his pace a little bit, slows down. So that enables her to finally grab him. And then she's saying, well, what am I going to do? Well, obviously she's not going to hit him, slap him, and hit him with a stick or anything. So she says, well, and now Krishna, he's first of all, of course, he's crying at that time because he's scared. We hear in this song how he's wiping the kajal in his eyes, is, you know, running down his face. It's so beautiful. With his tears are coming. And so first she thinks, okay, first she throws a stick down. I don't want it. She feels sorry for him. He's so scared. But then she thinks, well, he's causing so much mischief. I keep hearing all these complaints from everyone, all the rascal things he does and goes, breaks into people's houses and pinches their babies and makes them cry and pees on their floor. All these things that he does. So I'm afraid that when he grows up, he's going to get in trouble, you know, end up in jail or something. So I got to teach him a lesson. So she's also thinking, because Krishna is saying, I'm going to run away. And kids do that, right? Parents, okay, I'm just going to run away. You're going to try to discipline me. So he's telling his mother that, and his mother's thinking, well, this child is so, you know, precocious. Maybe he's going to do that. He's going to run away. I better tie him up so he doesn't go run away. So that's one of the reasons it's given that she went to tie him up. So she did, of course, but took her all day, basically, tie him up. Because every time she took some rope from her hair that was binding her hair. Actually, Yashoda Devi is described in the first verse of that chapter, 9th chapter, 10th canto, how beautiful she is. So it mentions how her hair, she always has flowers in her hair, and she has jewelry that's jingling and so on. Her body is shaking as she's churning. So she has a rope tying in her hair. And of course, it's not just some rope, obviously. It's a jeweled, beautiful rope, probably threaded with gold and everything, just like Nand Maharaj's stick. It's just not some stick. It's studded with jewels, everything. Everything is full of jewels in Gokula Vrindavan or Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's home. So she tries to tie him, but she thinks the rope is long enough, but she tries to tie him, she can't. And so she gets some more, whatever, and then the ladies are watching this, they're seeing this unfold, and they're starting to bring ropes to her, they keep giving more and more ropes. And sometimes it's said that ultimately she got all the ropes in the whole village, and still it was always 2 fingers too short, angula. Sometimes it said 2 inches, but the word angula was a finger. So 2 fingers. So she's saying, what's going on here? I keep adding ropes, but every time I try to tie the knot, it's still too short. So then, of course, the philosophical point is that he's God. Now this is another one of the inconceivable things about Krishna, because when he's performing his leelas, he's what's called in philosophy, medium size. He's not infinite or infinitesimal, he's medium size. So in other words, and of course when he takes apparently a human form, he seems like he's the right size for a kid. But actually his body is unlimited. This is why this idea really bothers people. They can't conceive of it. Of course, I can't conceive of it either. But we accept it, because it's there in the Shastras. His form, because when you think of form, well, no, it has, you know, some place where it ends, right? But Krishna has a form, but it doesn't end anywhere. It's everywhere. God is everywhere. And this is a common idea in any religion. God is everywhere. And it's not just his energy that's everywhere. His form is actually everywhere. It's unlimited, because he's beyond time and space. He doesn't exist in 3 dimensions, obviously. So he's beyond time and space. So how can you tie him up? You can't tie him up. There's no inside or outside of him. He's also described like that. He doesn't have these kinds of considerations that we understand with our limited brains that can only think of things in 3 dimensions, or time, past, present, and future, and so on. We're debilitated. We're definitely handicapped. We can't, there's just no way we can understand these things. So how to tie him up? Well, Krishna let her do it. That's how it works. Again, that's his will. He's responding, again, he's controlled by his mother's love. That's what happened, ultimately. He was thinking, oh, my mother is working so hard. Because after a while, she's sweating. She's so exhausted. She's actually exhausted. She's been trying for who knows hours to try to tie up her son, and she can't accomplish it. So she's frustrated and tired, and she wasn't able to do it. So then Krishna's feeling sorry for his mother. So then he allows himself to be tied up. So this is God. This comes out. We have these dual aspects of understanding our philosophy, how Krishna, first of all, he's the sweetest, or he's the most powerful, and he's the sweetest. I had written something, let me see if I can find that, where he said, oh yes, God's greatness. We learn, first, of course, we study Bhagavad Gita, and we study most of our scripture, as I was saying, we hear these prayers about how great God is. Prabhupada said, people say God is great, but they don't know how great he is. So we learn about God's greatness, so that nurtures within us the mood or the quality of submission. We learn that God is great, so, well, we have to submit to him. And of course, that's surrender. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, surrender to me. And in so many ways, of course, we learn, we have to, that God is, he's the boss, and we're his servants. So we learn submission by learning about how great God is. But we learn that when we learn about God's sweetness, just like in pastimes like this, then we develop more affection for Krishna. That's why I know everyone loves this month of Damodar, because you start feeling something. We all want to feel something, don't we? Sometimes we think, my heart is like steel and I don't feel anything. So this Damodar month, I know I think of this, I actually like this chapter of in the Bhagavatam where it shows what a neophyte I am, I guess. Where Akura comes, where Akura takes Krishna. Because I feel something when I hear that pastime. Some of the brothers don't like it. They say, oh, this is horrible. The gopis are suffering like anything. But at least I'm feeling something when I hear that chapter. So, of course, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Any feeling toward Krishna and Krishna Leela, that's good. It helps to soften our heart. We need that because our hearts are, they tend to be steel framed. We're not feeling the ecstasy of Krishna. Pure devotional service. I was just hearing one sannyasi explaining and said, when you're the platform of pure devotion, as soon as you hear anything about Krishna, then you just, essentially, you just go into ecstasy. Whenever you just hear Krishna's name, you're always, now the cowherd, I was giving class on the cowherd boys the other day. So all the residents of Vrindavan, they're always in ecstasy. As soon as they see Krishna, they hear his flute or anything in relationship to him. So this is pure devotion. So these two things together, actually, the submission and the affection, they're essential to what we're trying to do is devotion. We're trying to accomplish devotion. First, you know, we work our way up to bhava. That's where, of course, feelings of ecstasy are there. And then prema. Prabhupada said bhava is a preliminary stage of prema. So that devotion, this is, we're a society for devotion, bhakti. So bhakti comes from these two things. The mood of submission, cultivating that, surrender to Krishna. And we do that, of course, through Vaidhi Bhakti, the regulative principles and all the practices in the practice of Bhakti Yoga. And then affection, so many ways we can also develop that side. We have both of those things. Sometimes I think of it as like pushing and pulling. We're moving forward, so the rules side are somewhat, kind of like somebody in the back giving you a push or a kick in the backside, pushing you forward. And then the other, the attraction side, the lila and so on, is like more like a pull, the attraction. You want to, you're drawn forward, being pushed from the back by the rules and drawn forward by the attractiveness of Krishna. So this pastime of Lord Damodar is one of those, a nice example of that, that we can help us move forward toward Krishna. Okay. I'll stop here. Anybody have any questions? Yes, I see a hand back there. Is there a body attached to it? Maybe we can attach a microphone to it. Who's behind the asasan?
You were mentioning in the pastime that you were worried, Mother Yashoda was worried that Krishna might do such bad things, he might go to jail? Did they really have jails in those days?
No, I can't hear you.
When Krishna was on the planet?
Can someone repeat because I can't?
Yeah, I guess he was born in a jail, yeah.
Oh, so you got an answer
but
from somebody
I mean
else. Okay, good, because I can't hear.
In Braja, there was jail.
Over here, Devati Prabhu would like the microphone.
It's not so much a question as a comment. That very last point that you made about the philosophy pushing us and the ras pulling us, it reminded me, I've heard because of living at Gita Nagari, that if you're trying to get a calf to go into the barn and you try pushing, it's a very difficult job. But if you give him your hand, he starts sucking on it because he thinks it's his mother's teeth.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It's very easy to get the calf to get in the barn.
We used to have cows, and sometimes they would escape, and I would go with a bowl of grains. Wherever they were, they would just follow me back into the pasture. Okay. Yes, Boo in the back. Who's got the microphone?
You said that Krishna, Vishnu, listens to his pure devotees' desires, and he has no independence. He's kind of forced to fulfill the desires of his pure devotees. What if there are two pure devotees with conflicting desires? How can Krishna, you know, if a pure devotee wants rasagulas, but another pure devotee wants gulab jamuns, and like, please, Krishna, I want gulab jamuns, and another, well, please, I want rasagulas. How can Krishna resolve that?
By his inconceivable potency. Actually, Prabhupada, he gave that example. He said, the householder is praying, I hope no thief comes and breaks into my house. And the thief is praying, oh God, please help me break into this house. He said, poor God, he has to figure out what to do. So somehow he figures it out. Somehow he figures it out. He balances everything. There's infinite... Just like you solve a problem, but if you have too many variables, then it becomes extremely difficult. So there are infinite variables, but Krishna has an infinite computing power, so he can balance them all and come to the right conclusion, do what's right. He always does what's right. All right, let's stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.